commitment, and Malcolm signified that.
So my mentors were first called Robert Coles of Hampshire College, who will be speaking on an African American community of writers who were in Ghana at the period that Malcolm visited. Robert.
Well, I want to thank Brother Jane Boo for setting the context, and in my paper I hope to touch on some of the ideas he raised in the introduction, the idea about struggle, the idea of Africans coming from Africa to America, which is also very much a part of the process, as well as Black Americans going to Africa. Before I begin, I'm going to read a paper. And the discussion, as Brother Jayapu has pointed out, is to look at Malcolm X as a writer and in relationship to a literary community. Keeping in mind that historically, Black writers in America, I suppose Black writers generally, have tended to be both leaders or political activists as well as writers. So by citing Malcolm X as a writer, or by citing Black writers, I think I'm attempting to look at them in a much broader role than simply or merely literary. In any case, since the emigration and colonization movements of the 19th century, disaffected Black Americans have sought repatriation with their African homeland. Just a few figures to some of you might know these figures. Most Black Americans who left America went to Liberia before the Civil War, and it's estimated that between 12,000 and 15,000 free Black people emigrated from the U.S. to Liberia at that time. After the Civil War, approximately 5,000 Blacks left the United States, primarily for Liberia. And also to other places, other countries, notably Haiti. John Rushworth, Martin Delaney, Alexander Crummell are among those most well-known who actually left the U.S. for Africa for extended periods of time. Though the full story of Black American involvement, Black writers in this study, in Africa has yet to be told. Certainly one phase of the tale seems to stand out strikingly. From about 1951 to 1966, when in Ghana, under the leadership of Kwame Nkrumah, a small army of New World Blacks beat a path to his door. Thus Ghana became internationally known, as Brother Jayapu has pointed out, not only for the African liberation movements, which against colonialism, which originated there, but also as a showcase for Black achievement in the arts and sciences. For African Americans, the Nkrumah era played host to the literary giants of this century. Richard White, Wright, W.E.B. Boyce, Julian Mayfield, Maya Angelou, Malcolm X, as well as others. And it should be pointed out that all told, there were approximately 120 to 300 Black Americans living in Ghana at the time. These figures come from Julian Mayfield, by the way. 30 of whom lived in Accra. And the community there was quite large and extensive. Political activists, sociologists, dentists, writers, artists in many occupations were in Ghana, Black Americans. Some of the other writers, in addition to those mentioned, are Leslie Lacy, William Gardner Smith, and St. Clair Drake. They too were in Ghana at the time of Malcolm X. All of these writers came to Ghana during an exciting time, an important moment in world history. And most of them were transformed positively by the experience, a situation that has contributed to the greater fulfillment of African American and African letters in subsequent years. By the way, it's also important to point out that not just black Americans were in Ghana, or black American writers in this context. There were black writers from Nigeria, from South Africa, from Brazil, and many other parts of the world. And as well, there was a thriving international community, not just black people who were in Ghana, but a fairly large international community was also attracted to Ghana at the time. Now, there are many reasons why black writers left the U.S. for Africa. The most pronounced, which might be obvious, is their dissatisfaction with American racial policies and their effects. In the 19th century, prior to the Civil War, some writers felt directly threatened by a government that supported slavery and discrimination in the land of their birth. For these writers, the American experience was perceived as either a forced exile, in which a return to Africa was a return to home, or, more commonly, any social movement designed to solve black inequality could not succeed. Out of a feeling of hopelessness that this problem could not be solved, they left. In the 20th century, here too, many writers left the United States in their bitter condemnation of the American society. Though a major difference in these later writers is that they were more historically removed from Africa, hence viewing the continent not so much as a home to return to, but a setting for their own dissatisfaction with the USA. That is, conditions for black America was so unfulfilling toward aspirations that these writers couldn't live here anymore. And as Leslie Lately explains, some of you might know his book, The Rise and Fall of the Proper Negro. It's a very good discussion of Ghana, by the way, in that book. I needed to work out my inner confusion. To solve black inequality could not succeed. Out of a feeling of hopelessness that this problem could not be solved, they left. In the 20th century, here too, many writers left the United States in their bitter condemnation of the American society. Though a major difference in these later writers is that they were more historically removed from Africa, hence viewing the continent not so much as a home to return to, but a setting for their own dissatisfaction with the USA. That is, conditions for black America were so unfulfilling toward aspirations that these writers couldn't live here anymore. And as Leslie Lately explains, some of you might know his book, The Rise and Fall of the Proper Negro. Very good discussion of Ghana, by the way, in that book. I needed to work out my inner confusions. I did not believe that I could escape the taunts and attacks of America's racial madness in another American city. Another reason for why African Americans immigrated to Africa was the feeling of identity based upon color ancestry. As such, Africa was an important symbol of freedom because blacks constituted the population majority and were perceived as being in control of their own affairs. As William Gardner Smith says, Africa was where black men were the majority, not the minority. Africa was where black men ruled black men. Africa was black power. Equally, West Africa remained the site of where American slavery originated, and writers especially sought, perhaps sometimes unconsciously, to discover their own roots and their own paths in the context of slavery, and examining the historical extensions of their experiences in slavery. In this sense, a return to Africa was an attempt to discover where and how the slave process began, as well as an attempt to restore, atavistically, any racial memories that may have been left dormant. Sometimes, as in the case of Maya Angelou, writers were successful in reestablishing these links despite hundreds of years of physical separation. We also see this perhaps in the case of Alex Haley, Roots. Maya explains, "I have not consciously come to Ghana to find the roots of my beginnings, but I have continually and accidentally tripped over them or fallen upon them in my everyday life." But why Ghana? What was so special about the Ghanaian society that attracted black writers so overwhelmingly? While it is true that Ghana became the first country in colonial Africa to achieve independence, an event that was of tremendous importance for other African countries, while it is true that Ghana in the 1950s was relatively wealthy, that its successes in education, industrial development, and foreign affairs were quite impressive, such achievements appear meaningless without focusing upon Kwame Nkrumah, his thoughts and efforts, as the primary catalyst for change. For Nkrumah was determined to ensure that black people regained their self-respect wherever they might be. Thus, he built a unified power base and set African common people, not merely the middle class, in motion against British imperialism and colonialism. For black Americans, Nkrumah had a special interest and concern in that from 1935 to 1945, he lived and was formally educated here in the U.S., BA Lincoln University and an MA at University of Pennsylvania. Therefore, he knew firsthand the difficulties that black Americans daily underwent. And this is no doubt a significant factor in his determination to rid his society of discrimination. Furthermore, Nkrumah never hesitated to assist black Americans who needed help towards projects which favored the black man's liberation and enhancement. Insofar as black writers, he encouraged them to come and assisted in financial support once arriving. Additionally, Nkrumah's politics were attractive. Writers liked his ideological thinking. Julia Mayfield says, "Nkrumah's world image was that of a militant socialist, and I think it was this image that drew not only me, but most other black Americans to Ghana." Now, black writers came to Ghana in two phases, those who came before 1960 and those who came after. That is, from about 1960 to the coup that toppled the regime in 1966. Those who came before 1960 came at a time when indeed Ghana was militantly struggling against colonialism, but less hostile to Western economic interests, and in external relations remained non-aligned but favored the West over the East. At the same time, Ghana had not yet demonstrated its total commitment to other African liberation movements. Fewer African-American writers came to Ghana, and only one major writer visited, that is Richard Wright, who wrote a book based upon his observations there in 1954 called Black Power. After 1960, the Ghanaian state underwent an important change from non-alignment
to a significant leftward shift in the political center of gravity. Though Nkrumah still professed non-alignment, his public pronouncements took an anti-Western, pro-socialist stance, and he became more involved in promoting Pan-African revolution. It was in this later phase that most Black American writers came to Ghana, and including specifically Malcolm X. Now, when Malcolm X broke from the Nation of Islam in 1964, perhaps this is common knowledge, I don't know, one sees something of a dramatic transformation in his religious and political development. Prior to his break, his view of Islam was decidedly a reflection of what he had been taught by Elijah Muhammad. After the break, his conception of Islam changed from a religion feeding off hatred and bitterness to a religion sustained by brotherhood and love. Politically, before the break, he viewed the civil rights movement as a domestic concern involving blacks and whites in the USA. After the break, his conception of American race problems became more internationalized. Most important, for the purpose of this study, once Malcolm left the Nation of Islam, he discovered Africa. That is, he evolved from a black nationalist to a pan-Africanist. And in this process of change and growth, Malcolm's perception of Africa grew from an intellectual and hence distant subject to that of a concrete experience that moved him profoundly in emotional and perhaps spiritual terms. Or, as Julian Mayfield claims, Julian Mayfield says, "I think in many ways Malcolm's months in Africa were the happiest of his life." When Malcolm came to Africa for his extended trip in 1964, he was immediately enthralled. And perhaps I should just stop a minute and cite that Malcolm took two extended trips to Africa. His first trip from April 13th to May 21st, 1964, he visited the Middle East, Africa, including Egypt, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Nigeria, Ghana, Morocco, and Algeria. And this is when he took his famous pilgrimage to Mecca. Returning to the U.S. May 21st, 1964. His second trip to Africa occurred in early July 1964, where he attended the Organization of African Unity Conference that opened in Cairo, July 17th, 1964. And in his second trip, he was invited to 16 African countries, and he attended most of those countries, and one of which was Ghana. So that's his second trip to Ghana. And he returned to the U.S. November 24th, 1964. In his first extended trip in 1964, he was immediately enthralled. Especially upon coming to Ghana, as Malcolm says, the very fountainhead of Pan-Africanism. And he was enthralled by his reception there. Malcolm says, "I simply couldn't believe this kind of reception 5,000 miles from Africa, or from America. I can only wish that every American black man could have shared my ears, my eyes, and my emotions. Throughout the round of engagements which had been made for me in Ghana. And such is the account Malcolm documents, of course, in his famous autobiography, where he significantly suggests evoked by his arrival. That is, Malcolm is moved personally and emotionally to a degree that marks the Ghanaian experience herein described as an important moment in terms of his own life, as well as the life of African-American peoples, historically and in literary terms. Now, I think this later point is very important in view of the fact that Malcolm's reception in Ghana was spearheaded by the black expatriate community, but also by black American writers for the purpose of this study, those writers being Julian Mayfield, who was chairman of the Malcolm X Committee, and Maya Angelou, who was vice chairman, demonstrating even more fundamentally that some of Malcolm's greatest supporters at that time were young writers and artists, as well as others, who would go on to make Malcolm the subject of their poems, their plays, their essays, and their stories, or they would further incorporate Malcolm's ideals as participants in the black arts movement of the 1960s and 1970s. At this point, it should also be kept in mind that Malcolm X came to Ghana as a revolutionary with the specific purpose to promote greater unity, as Brother Jayefu pointed out, greater unity between the African-American and the African struggle, as well as to gain sponsors to take the black American case before the United Nations. He did not come to Africa, to Ghana, to stay, as one who sought exile, nor did he come to choose to stay for an extended period of time as an expatriate. Nor did Malcolm urge other black Americans to return to Africa to resettle. Rather, he believed a psychological, cultural, and philosophical migration back to Africa would help solve black American problems as well as African problems. And as Brother Jayefu pointed out, he saw the black liberation struggle in Africa as inextricable and related to the black liberation struggle in America. And felt that one struggle could not succeed without the other. Hence, Malcolm's trip was even more successful when judged by the reception given to him by the Ghanaian people, along with the international community. The Ghanaians went out of their way to accommodate Malcolm X, arranging him to meet most of the officials of Ghana and inviting him to speak at the Ghanaian parliament. The members of the press were particularly generous and helpful in making speaking arrangements for Malcolm and publicizing his visit. Major newspapers cited his speeches, activities, and movements. One Ghanaian journalist, for instance, wrote an article entitled Malcolm Asibe, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. This was published in the Ghanaian Times, in which he asserted, "I have met very few people in this life who have impressed me with the urgency and absoluteness of a message as has Malcolm X." Yet, the high point of Malcolm's trip came with his inspiring speech at Great Hall, University of Ghana, May 13th, 1964. In the largest single audience that he had in Africa, Malcolm addressed the students and faculty and others to standing ovation. In this speech, which I have read parts of, an incredible speech, if you get a chance to read it or hear it, you should, he stressed his newly developed international and Pan-African consciousness and spoke of linking the Black American and African causes together. And so the first visit of Malcolm X, those 7 days in early May 1964, represents a pinnacle moment to the Black American writers who were there working hard on the Malcolm X committee. And everything I've read in literature about the Malcolm X committee suggests that all of those who were involved did a tremendous job in preparing the groundwork and giving Malcolm a tremendous reception that I think needs to be spoken to and needs to be emphasized again and again. For Malcolm brought to them, particularly Black Americans in Ghana, a spirit of hope, unity, and consensus, which was rarely apparent in the exiled community. Most important, he helped them to crystallize their political ideas and to iron out some of their emotional confusion, as indeed Malcolm was ironing out some of his own confusion. Perhaps equally, Malcolm's visit represents the pinnacle of the entire Nkrumah era in the sense of how it demonstrates unity among African peoples, including Africa's most distant cousin, the African American. Thereafter, for both Nkrumah and for Malcolm X, time was running out. For Nkrumah, he would soon face greater economic problems, as well as increasing criticism over alleged corruption. For Malcolm, although he would make a second trip to Ghana in August 1964, and I believe his second trip, he stayed for 2 or 3 days, this time his second trip was less eventful, further undermined by his fear of approaching assassination. For some Black American writers, they would be coming home soon too. Maya Angelou to return a few days before Malcolm's death in 1965. Julian Mayfield to leave Ghana shortly before the coup, but having become dismayed with the Nkrumah regime well before then. Yet the end did not come so that we would forget what great accomplishments happened in Ghana under the presidency of Kwame Nkrumah. Much did he and his supporters achieve, no doubt. But for those Black American writers who were there, the Nkrumah era transformed them significantly, with additional impact upon African American history and literature, as well as African history and literature as a whole in subsequent years. That's it. Thank you.